This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. This week we're here to talk about VAR in the CSL once again, reflect on the ACL, and throw some other three-letter words into the mix, because we've got quite a good and varied discussion agenda for you this week, listeners. I am, as always, your host, Steve Crooks, joined by our regular experts on all matters Chinese football, Brandon Chemers in Beijing. How are you doing this week, Brandon?
Good to be here, as always, Steve. Looking forward to this one.
And Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. Hi, good to speak with you again, Cam.
Hi, Steve. Hope everybody's well.
So we've got lots to get stuck into. We'll start by looking back at what happened in the CSL in the latest round. And I guess we need to start at the top of the table once again. A relatively straightforward win, making it nine straight for Beijing Guoan, Brandon. Two goals for Bakambu, who interestingly seemed to be coming in for some criticism, I see, prior to this, which seems remarkable from the outside.
You know, if you haven't watched every match, then it is sort of remarkable. But, I mean, he is on a pretty decent scoring rate. He scored some big goals along the way, but the thing is that it's sort of the goals that he misses that can get really frustrating. He had a couple of really good chances against Junbuk, the Urawa game, the first Urawa game in the Champions League. He had a number of chances, and I think those two games together easily could have been wins for Guoan if Bakambu played slightly better. So the fans are a little harsh, especially considering, you know, it's the sort of thing that with everything going well, you know, nine straight wins there, it's hard to really criticize anyone, but Guoan fans are so used to the lack of success. And so you have to find something bad about the way things are going. And I think a lot of fans have sort of focused on Bakambu.
Yeah, what many other sides wouldn't give for someone who kind of scores at his rate. Do you think, Cam, that in general fans have these extremely high expectations of foreign players that sometimes just aren't fair?
There is a high expectation of foreigners in general. I mean, Bakambu, I mean, he's not played all the games, right, but I mean, what has he scored? Is it four CSL appearances, four goals, right?
Yeah, the stats, that's something like that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he's done well.
You can't really fault that, but, you know, maybe the ACL, Guoan's not quite kept up the form as compared to the CSL. But in Bakambu's case, you can't really ask much more. In general, yeah. I mean, at the same, you've got to remember these guys have paid a lot of money, and they are, generally speaking, a lot more able than Chinese counterparts. So it's not really surprising that the expectations are high. But as far as Guoan goes, I mean, they've won every CSL game so far, so I think the fans should be happy with that.
Fan expectations when it comes to these big money foreigners or any of the foreign players, because you're so limited in the number of options that you. In the foreign players that you have in your squad, that fans really expect unbelievable rates of returns. And it's either absolute love or hate sort of situation. And whenever sort of a foreign player even sort of shows a bit of struggle, the fans tend to be very quick to, you know, put the label of Shui Hua, be like a useless player, or start attacking him, or start, you know, with Bakambu, there's discussions, oh, is it too cold in Beijing for him? Even though, you know, he's played in Turkey, he's played in France, he knows what winter is, but because he's from Africa, maybe he's not used to the cold. You know, you see all of these crazy things that go on, and it's sort of, they're just, it's a very quick to judge. They're sort of, the expectations are you come in and you start delivering, and if you don't, it can be harsh.
I think it depends on the club.
Maybe it's just the general bleakness of Beijing.
Yeah, it depends on the club as well, I think. It sounds like, to me, Guoan fans are a bit harsh, but Beijing in general's attitude towards foreigners might be a bit different to Shanghai, I don't know. With Shenhua, the foreigners kind of get a lot of leeway, actually. They tend to be given a hero's welcome before they even kick the ball, which is nice to get a warm welcome, but it perhaps gives them a little bit too much sense of security. At the end of the day, this is just part of the problem that the clubs are really so reliant on foreign players that the pressure is pretty big and they've really got to deliver, and that's what boils down to.
Yeah, some really good points there, and it actually leads nicely into the first kind of listener question I wanted to throw in, because we got a great response to the mailbag this week. This one from Patrick, and it's very much on topic with struggling foreigners. If you were Wanda, the guys who run Dalian, obviously, what are you going to do about the situation with Hamsik? Fans want him to leave. His effort has been rightly questioned. I mean, Dalian are fairly awful at the start of this year, and Hamsik has done very little, but Brandon, if you then would you stick or twist, and is this another example that we've just talked about expectations being perhaps unrealistic and unfair?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, and Cameron made the point about, you know, the welcomes you get, and it was the same for Hamsik and Dalian. You get these crazy welcomes and there's an automatic expectation that because you did A in Europe in whatever top league, you're going to be able to do the same thing here in China, and it doesn't work that way. It's a big adjustment. It's not only an adjustment with the new team and everything, but just with the culture and everything. And as we saw this week with a story from a player who was in, a foreigner who was in Henan, calling Henan, Zhengzhou, a terrible city, and that he never wanted to come back to China. It's sort of these sort of stories you have come out, you know. So it's a big adjustment for sure. And specifically with the situation with Dalian, I think they should definitely stay with Hamsik. He's a player of quality, and giving him a half a season is just too little, especially when he's not playing in every match, which has to make things even harder for him.
I think it is true to say that even though we just said this pressure's on, I do agree that you really need to give players time to settle in. It's really such a big change, and just simply being very talented at football does not mean that you'll be able to overcome the cultural differences or the somewhat lower quality of those you're doing around, those beside you, the somewhat lower quality of those around you in terms of doing your job. That's quite a leap for some players. And if you notice the players who've stayed longer in China, they tend to be the ones, like, for example, if you take Oscar, a good example, SIPG, I mean, he was fairly so-so in his first season, Hulk the same, and now they're got up to speed and they're very, very important players for the club. Moreno at Shenhua, exactly the same. They seem to look pretty good at first, but then the kind of honeymoon period is over and there's quite a long period of adjustment, which players really need. And that applies to anybody, really, who's changing club, but especially for foreigners playing in China.
Yeah, and I think it's actually a good point. They're adjusting to a new country, new culture, new way of life. I think many people who listen to the podcast, by the nature of our subject, will have moved overseas for work at some point in their life, and there is undoubtedly an adjustment there. I mean, you didn't mention Guarin, who I think is maybe the best example of this. He was abject in his first year at Shenhua. Looked worse than most of the kind of, you know, youth team players who would boss him in the midfield. And after a year settling in, he had an awful lot more to contribute. So patience is difficult when you're struggling at the bottom of the league, as they are. But patience, I think, is what we're counselling here.
There is actually a common thread, and the players are discussed as Guarin and Moreno play for Shenhua. Shenhua, for the longest time, changed up every single foreigner they could in every single window. Basically, players would only stay for half a year or a year. It was all about getting new transfers in so they could get commissions on the transfer. And the person who was allegedly benefited from that a lot was Shenhua's Zhou Jun. And guess which club Zhou Jun is now CEO at, or rather general manager, and he's now at Dalian Yifang. So it's not surprising to me, and it's been commented by a lot of other people, that now Zhou Jun is at Dalian Yifang. They've now started buying expensive, useless foreigners.
Sounds like he could well be on his way in that case. That's a good point. I wanted to move from the bottom of the league back to the top, and what I think undoubtedly was the game of the weekend. Absolute madness at the end of the match in Shanghai Stadium with it's 1-1 going deep into injury time. It looks like Shandong have won it, only for their goal to be overruled and to then concede a penalty and lose the game at the other end. Brandon, is this a case of fortune favouring the reigning champions, the officials favouring them, kind of that never say die attitude, all of the above? What's your take on this one?
It really was an insane match. You know, how many times do you see in 5 minutes of added time a team go from winning winning and taking 3 points to losing the match, like happened to Shandong. I mean, if you look at it, the calls seem to be right. The handball, maybe you could kind of argue, if you hate SIPG, that it was kind of harsh. But other than that, it's a bit of luck. And I think that these sort of things, I'd be interested in seeing stat wise. But you know, you often see the sort of the turning of a match after, you know, missing of a penalty or you know, scoring a goal or something, a big point like that. And I think having that goal overturned by VAR, having Shandong's goal overturned, is what gave like SIPG that final push to go down the field, and they got lucky. And it's an unbelievable result, and sort of having followed the match through the terrace grapevine, it was shocking to then find out after having celebrated inside the stadium, Shandong's victory, having found out by the time I got outside that they lost the match. Really crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's a terrible one for the terrace rumour mill. Interesting point, actually, on how VAR breaks maybe do change the momentum of the match a bit more. Kind of, what's the mood or what's the reporting like in Shanghai around this one, Cam? I've got a sneaking feeling that, you know, it is the mark of champions, right? They've not played well all season, and yet they're hanging in there, and they're not that far away from a team that looks unassailable at the top of the league, but it's still only a few points.
A lot of attention is quite fairly on Guan because of the perfect start so far, but SIPG have not looked as impressive as Guan, or we could even say maybe Evergrande, but they've still managed to get enough of the results to be still in contention. This kind of game is it's the kind of game which we, as football fans, make us feel one extreme or the other. If you're a Shandong fan, you'd just be completely spitting your tea out. If you're an SIPG fan, you'd just be going completely nuts. And this is really what football is all about. And so from this point of view, I think VAR added to the drama. But I kind of have reservations still about VAR and affecting the flow of the game. I'm not really convinced that it's really been made football better or not, but in this case it certainly was pure theatre. But I mean, as for the calls, I mean, to me it looked like pretty blatant handball, to be honest. I think they've got them right.
Yeah, difficult to disagree with them, even if many fans would maybe go against the sentiment. Another game with late drama, Evergrande leaving it to the very end to snatch a draw against Jiangsu. A penalty from one of our favourite players for his antics last year, Wei Shihao. Brandon, do you think this was the right call as well? And also, this game feels a little bit irrelevant given how Evergrande are falling off the pace a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Evergrande, they're still not that far off. They're still Evergrande, so I think there's always that time. And, you know, Guan is going to sort of suffer through. We'll have to see. There's that big match against SIPG next weekend, but then after that, and even before that, they lose Jiang Yuning, they lose, in theory, Renato Augusto, and definitely they lose Bakambu. So Guan isn't without its struggles in the months to come. So I think Evergrande, if they can stay tight, you know, and it's going to be interesting. As to the actual match, it did look like a handball. The players moved, the motion is hand forward, everything. Wei Shihao was able to do something decent on a football pitch for once, so that was interesting. But yeah, I think we should just coin the term Evergrande as being defeated in the last minutes of a match, and that's already at least the second time that they've done this to someone this year, probably more, but off the top of my head, I can think of at least one other occasion, and that's what Evergrande does.
Yeah, they are potentially there lurking as well. One of the team near the top that I wanted to call out, and we've had a bit of praise for them in the comments over the past few weeks as well, but it's another win for Chongqing. They're kind of sitting pretty as best of the rest behind the top three, Cam. Do we need to start taking them more seriously, or do you still think this is early season form that's going to fall away?
No, they're going to fall away. I don't want to see what they've done, which is going to mean they sustain the run. It's not to say anything bad about them. They've been fairly fairly solid the last couple of years. I mean, they're usually nearer the bottom than the top, but they seem to be doing something right this year. But I don't expect them to be in the top half of the table coming into the season.
You know, we sort of expected Shandong to be doing sort of slightly better than they are, but when the rest of it, you look at where Chongqing is in fourth, 1 point ahead of Shandong, there's literally 10 points that separate fourth from 16th right now. It's pretty tight there. And so Chongqing is closer to 16th than they are to Guan in first. So I think we'll see that level of mediocrity in the middle of the table sort of work its way out. But I wouldn't really take very much from where Chongqing is right now.
Closer to the bottom than the top on points, they are the Manchester United of China. Let's move onwards to a question actually that came in from Jeff that alludes a little bit to a point you made a little bit earlier, Brandon. Are there any places you can go to find some serious analytics applied to Chinese football? I'm assuming he's talking about kind of detailed stats, because when we get overwhelmed in European leagues now with, you know, expected goals and lots of the other statistics that are thrown around, it seems a lot more rudimentary for Chinese football. I know that, you know, I'll have a look at possession stats and shots on either a site like Soccerway or directly in Google. Other than betting sites, potentially, where else is there to go for some detailed statistics if listeners are interested in that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's not very much out there. I know there was a while ago, maybe it was two or three seasons ago, when Guan was sort of doing a full program where they were taking stats from OPTA and making those public. I do think they OPTA operates in China, but it's basically a subscription basis, and it can be difficult to publicly come across a lot of those stats. And so I don't really think that they're available to the general public. But rest assured that your favorite teams, at least the top sides in the CSL, are definitely looking at these sort of analytics and basing decisions off of them as well. I'm not sure if everyone in the CSL is, but I definitely would expect some of the top teams are using whatever sort of new approaches and sort of the approaches that exist overseas. They're adopting them here in China as well.
I think my favorite team makes decisions based on monkeys on typewriters, to be honest with you, but that's neither here nor there. There's one interesting point I wanted to follow up on this that just came to me, Cam. I mentioned that we're kind of in Western media and newspapers and websites around football, you get flooded with statistics as the primary way even to analyze the game sometimes. Is that the case in the Chinese football media, or do people still go for a more kind of narrative type approach, or just kind of puff pieces from the club where they're you know, hyping up overrated players that we see?
There's a bit of everything. Although what I find is very interesting in China is, generally speaking, a stat-based society. People are always talking about numbers. I think that's a reflection of the fact, I mean, China's basically run by China scientists and engineers. I know there's this kind of emphasis on the mathematical side of things, but that doesn't really flow through into football. As Brandon said, there's not a lot flying about. There are all the big stat companies like OPTA, they do covers China, but it's not public info. Sometimes you see copies of stats in terms of players' individual stats. These kind of leak out or might be discussed in a story, but mostly what you see is the actual shots on target and the team stats will be discussed to some extent, but there's not this kind of statistical breakdown to the same extent there would be in other football places or even other sports. But I think in general, football data and stats are still, relatively speaking, not quite in the mix when it comes to talking about football as a whole, compared with other sports anyway.
Yeah, and compared with kind of the country and KPIs in general, that's a really interesting point, actually, a bit of culture and politics along with your football on the podcast here. We're going to talk about a bunch more listener questions and also get into continental action in the second half of the show. But before we do that, it's time for a little break and our regular Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
So last week, Cam, you'll be happy. Your favourite kind of gavel banging topic to come back to, Evergrande and their policy, was a runaway winner in the vote. Maybe because there was not a Shanghai International Port Group option, I'm not sure. Hamsik coming in second, and Hebei and their apology to their fans taking third place. Time for some nominations this week, then. I know this is often more of a flippant section of the show, but yeah, certainly coming from a Shanghua side, I think the only thing I can mention as a phenomenon of last week is the unfortunate passing of one of the club's more kind of famous and storied supporters in Zhang Ai, kind of a 61-year-old lady who followed the team at home and away, came down here to Sydney for the games. There's any number of photos of a bunch of us with her floating around on the internet. And, you know, the outpouring of kind of emotion that this engendered in the fan base, and the fact that it just reminds you about what's really important about football, because there's no other way that, you know, your life would cross paths with people from these completely different places, and the great unifying scene that it is. Bit more serious tone with the nomination this week. I do kind of apologise for that, but we do have to mention these things sometimes. Brandon, I believe you get the second nomination this week.
Yeah, and I will say about that one, it's definitely a good one, and it's very sad. And even the Guan different media was did some write ups about it, and you know, it's something that hit, I think, all the footballing fans in China pretty hard. So that's a good one. But for me, I'm going to do something slightly closer to home. It's personal to me, so I don't expect anyone will vote for it. But at the same time, Li Ke has been an excellent player for Guan, you know, the first naturalized player to score a goal and all of that. But over the weekend, we were at Gongti. My son wanted to get some autographs and stuff and ended up falling down at some point and was crying. And Li Ke was riding off on a scooter, came back to help us out, even took him into the club and got him bandaged up. And so a really good guy to go the extra mile for a young fan. So Li Ke gets my nomination.
Nice. Two of the kind of human faces of football nominated so far. What have you got for us this week, Cam?
I should say Nico Yanaris, sorry.
Are you going to bang on about Evergrande again, or what's your nomination this week?
Yeah, I'm going to bang on about Evergrande again. Although I want to give a special mention to Zhang Ai, because she was a personal friend of mine, and although her passing was not completely unexpected, of course these things are never easy to take when they occur. And I'd just like to just underline everything you said. It was just fantastic to see someone who was from a different generation, different culture, different place, but when you're in the football stadium, everyone was all on the same side, and she was very much in the mix.
The same passion.
Yeah. I just wanted to say a couple of words about that. Well, I want to this time I'm going to nominate Evergrande's, I don't know where to say, transfer policy or team selection policy. So the place is Jiangsu Suning, right? Suning's got an Italian defender, Paletta. They've got two, they've got Martins and Teixeira up front. Evergrande's got Poligno, one foreign player. So who have they got on the bench? They don't even have Tyus Brownen, who, okay, maybe he's a good player, maybe he's not. But the thing is, why do they only have four? They've only got two players, both defenders. They've got Park Ji-soo, Korean defender, and they didn't even use them. So I just find it so strange. Okay, maybe these guys aren't that great, but then why did they even have these guys in the first place? It's just so strange, and I'm just going to own it Evergrande again.
I get the feeling this is going to be a recurring nomination. We can kind of have one of those options in the poll written in every week, which makes our jobs a little bit easier. Look forward to hearing listener votes as always, and maybe we'll return to something a bit more flippant next week. You never know. So into the second half of the show then, and with five matches down and one very big match for many of the teams left to look forward to, it's time to look back on the Champions League group stages once again. It still looks like probably three of the Chinese sides getting through is the most likely outcome, but one of them are in the next round for sure, and perhaps it's a side that none of us would have expected at the beginning of the season. Shandong, through with time to spare, doing better internationally than at home. Cam, I have a feeling that their style of play, it's very kind of physical and robust and, you know, big men up front and long balls into the box and everything else, and It seems more effective, maybe, you know, in international competition than it is in the CSL. Do you think there's anything to that, or is the sample size too small?
No, I think it's a pretty solid theory. I do agree that their style of play does seem to fit that description. Also, if you wanted to look at it from a perspective of teams favouring one competition over the other, I think Shandong, maybe, and I'm just saying this as a possible theory, maybe they want to put more emphasis on the ACL because they don't think they're really going to be a serious contender for the CSL title. I don't know. They've also got the Jor Darul Tazim. Oh, I'm sorry if I probably completely butchered the pronunciation of that Malaysian side, but they're the first Malaysian team to play in ACL for quite some time, and they've not been pushovers, but they're an obvious weaker team in a four-team group. So,
well, I think particularly given that they have picked up points against the other sides, which is something that, you know, a couple of the Chinese sides who are in trouble, that they've got kind of these bottom-feeding Australian sides who are taking points off nobody in the group, and it's just a three-way shootout against the Japanese and the Korean teams then. So, yeah, maybe there is something in that. Speaking of one of those teams, and Brandon, do you think Evergrande are going to Evergrande it again? They lost in Hiroshima. They've got an all-or-nothing game at home against Daegu. Win and they're through. Anything other than winning and they're out. I mean, there's two narratives here, right? One of them is that this kind of old, you know, wily group of players, they lift themselves one last time. They get that dodgy late penalty and get through. The other one is that Cannavaro takes them out in the group stages for the second time.
It's really tough. It's really tough to call this one, because the thing is that on top of the injury to Talisca, and it doesn't seem like he will be able to play, you have Gaolin, who also seems like he's going to be out for this one and could be out for a while. And so that is going, you have Wei, that's why you have Wei Shihao taking sort of this late penalty over the weekend. They're really down to the bone when it comes to attacking players on this side. But at the same time, it is Evergrande, and so I do think they find a way against Daegu. The one thing that I would say is interesting so far is that out of all of the sides, there's been six matches between Chinese sides and Korean sides so far, we've only seen Chinese sides take 4 points in six games, and all of those have come from Shandong against Gyeongnam, who are the weakest Korean side in the AFC this time around. So looking at SIPG and against Ulsan, and looking at Daegu against Evergrande, it's sort of it's hard to expect a good result, but it is Evergrande, and you know, until they prove otherwise, I still think they find a way to win this one.
You're very positive on Evergrande for a change. Maybe it's just years of seeing them do this kind of, you know, through gritted teeth. I think it's an interesting point that Brandon makes on the Korean teams there, Cam, because, I mean, if we look at Guan's group, they lost for the second time to Jeonbuk. What do you think this says about the status of the CSL and Chinese teams in general? Because, I mean, Guan are imperious at home. They've played 9, won 9, scored 20, conceded 2. But both times they've come up against Jeonbuk, and Jeonbuk are a good team, don't get me wrong, but they've looked really outclassed by it. Is this something we should be worried about?
I was expecting a win or at least a draw the way Guan was playing. This isn't the same Guan side that went to Jeonbuk and got clobbered, but they still got beaten and they were just completely outplayed. And there's a lot of talk afterwards about how good these Korean sides are. And just Jeonbuk came with a strategy. They stuck to their game. They stayed tight. They were unbelievably disciplined, played very well tactically in ways that we've never seen a Chinese side do, where it's just they have a game plan and they're able to really stick to it. I think the discipline and the quality just of some of these Korean teams is head and shoulders above what we see in the CSL, despite, you know, what might happen in one-offs here and there. I think at the end of the day, I think the K-League, at least some of the Ulsan and Jeonbuk, these top sides, are still much better than what we're watching in China.
Certainly at the moment, I'm going to do my obligatory stand-up for just how good that Evergrande side of about 5 years ago was, and they did boss games internationally. But yeah, right now it's difficult to disagree with that. I mean, Guan, it's a really tall ask for them, right? They need to go and they need to win a game in Urawa in order to knock out Urawa themselves. Are fans going into this one with hope, with expectations, and you know, are they already starting to kind of prioritize the league up in Beijing, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure. I think a draw with goals will be enough to put Guan through. If it's a goalless draw, then Guan won't go through. But I do think a draw would put them through. But at the same time, you know, to start the season, I always said the ACL was just sort of a bonus. There wasn't a lot of expectation this year, especially, you know, they have hands down the hardest group of any Chinese side. There wasn't sort of expectation that they'd glide through this group. And, you know, if they get knocked out, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it would be good for them just to focus on the league, focus on the cup. So it wouldn't be that disappointing, although they are so close now that fans are, you know, it's hard not to have a bit of hope.
Yeah, good point on the correction as well. I just double-checked the rules. You're correct. They would, with a score draw, go through on head-to-head away goal scored as a thing of third or fourth tiebreaker. So nil-nil coming up then. And the one team we've not talked about in detail yet, Destiny is in the hands of Shanghai International Port Group still, Cam. They've not had a great campaign, kind of Hulk with a one-man show, getting them a point in Japan. That might be enough. They probably need to win their last home game against Ulsan, but Ulsan are a good team. They're already through. They might well send the reserves. Do you get a feeling that we're going to see a Shanghai side in the next round?
Yeah, I think Sebaju will have enough to get past Ulsan. I just say Ulsan's already through and they can't even be caught in first place. So given that teams from Korea and Japan do at times send weakened teams, there's not any reason to think that Ulsan's going to put a full strength side out in this game. So I would expect SWG to make it.
Yeah, I get the feeling that we'll probably be talking about three of them in the hat for the next round. It's not a hat, is it? It's a preseeded draw. Anyway, we'll talk about how they've done and which of them we feel are going to have the best chance of maybe going all the way once matters are settled there. A couple more questions from the mailbag to come back to. While we're speaking of kind of matters continental, question from a boy named Sue. Staying with the three-letter theme of the show, who are the best AFC plus one players in the CSL? I think I know, Brandon, who you're going to nominate already.
Yeah, you do. I think hands down, Kim Min-jae has made a big impact early on. Unfortunately, it hasn't really come out in the ACL as much, but definitely in the league, he has been a critical addition to the Guan side.
Yeah, any other Asian players that you'd like to nominate as key man, Cam? Any love for kind of Akhmadov there?
Akhmadov is, I think I've said before, I'm a great admirer of his. I think he's a really tenacious midfielder. He's very, very athletic. He gets stuck in and he covers a lot of ground. He's got a decent shot on him as well. I very rarely see him waste possession too. He's very much somebody, he seems to have all the qualities you would hope to see in any defensive midfielder. But of course, the sad thing is that this season, there's simply not very many Asian players left in the CSL now that the 3-plus run rule isn't used anymore. We basically got, we got Kumyong, Kun Yuan at Tenhai, Park Ji-soo, Evergrande, but we just talked about him. He seems to just not get a game forever for some reason, even if they've only got one player on the pitch. And as Brandon just mentioned, Kim at Guan, I mean, I think those are literally the only ACL Asian players, so there's not as many to choose from as there used to be, but yeah, for me, I think Amadov's a quality player.
Interestingly, as you mentioned with the rule change, I mean, both Kim and Akhmadov are players who are good enough, you know, to count as one of the three foreigners in a quota and not get in there as a kind of extra, you know, plus one AFC player. And we don't see enough of them. It would be great to see the rules change back. I think we're all unified in saying that, but I'd be surprised if it did happen anytime soon. Another rule, which is maybe unpopular and we're probably not going to see change anytime soon, although they do love tweaking the rules a little bit. A question from Roy on the under 23 policy. Does under 23 count as a three letter acronym? I think it does. So it does get into the show. I'm going to come to you first on this one, Brendan. He and a couple of other listeners have mentioned how after a relatively kind of calm start to the season, we're seeing more and more kind of bizarre and I quote, humiliating decisions by coaches in terms of hitting this under 23 quota. You know, we've seen goalkeepers brought on to play up front for the last couple of minutes of a game. We've seen under 23 players come on in injury time and replace immediately by another under 23 player. Do we think that clubs and coaches are going to be punished at any point for this kind of behavior?
I don't think so. I think it's unfortunate. And, you know, we keep coming back to sort of the U23 topic, and to me it's a flawed rule, but it's not a bad rule. It has done a lot of good. You look at Guan with, you know, I keep coming back to Guan, but you know, Zhang Yuning and even Wang Zeming is now in, has two goals I think already this season, and this is a guy who would not really be playing without the U23 rule. You know, you look at Guo Chuanbo, who was sort of nowhere in the national team setup at any level and is now in the national team, the U23 side. Even like Wei Shihao at Evergrande or some of these other guys here and there. I think the U23 rule, for every sort of, everyone loves these sort of jokey bad examples as a way to attack it and attack Chinese football. But at the same time, for every bad example, there's also good examples, and there's players being developed from it. And it's incorrect to completely write it off.
I agree. I think the official pod position is, while flawed in some ways, it's broadly speaking a good rule and a good initiative. One thing, I am surprised, Cam, that they haven't changed the rule to kind of mandate playing time or started cracking down on clubs who are doing this, because they're willing to change the laws and throw out arbitrary punishments on many other matters we've seen.
They are. I also agree with Brandon broadly. I do think that the under 23 rule has had quite a positive impact in some ways. I don't think the teams are going to be punished. The only people who will be punished are people who want to see a normal football competition, because this rule will probably be changed, or it will be adopted to be trying, it'll be even more strange or obscure in an effort to try and stop teams from doing this sort of thing, which of course doesn't do anybody any favours. But if you make these rules, then you're always going to have teams who will get around them by following the rule to the letter, but not the spirit. I mean, incidentally, actually, it had some interesting effects. Actually, Xinhua has leads the CSL under 23 minutes on the pitch table, which is the only thing they're going to be leading anytime soon.
And that's exactly the table that matters.
That's quite a change compared to how the club was not so long ago. So from that point of view, you have to ask yourself, would that have happened without the under 23 rule? I tend to think not. I just think that they really need to change the rules so that it's looking at pitch time. Interestingly, I did notice, to connect the CSL to another CSL, or rather the Canadian Soccer League, which was launched, I think, just a few weeks ago, they actually have a rule. I think it's either homegrown or under 23 players or youth players, they actually have a prerequisite number of minutes throughout the season these players have to play. And I think these days, with all the stats we were talking about earlier, it's very easy to keep a track of this thing. And there's no reason why they couldn't actually use minutes on the pitch rather than these obscure subs. I think they need to tweak this rule further so that it doesn't result in these kind of ridiculous things like goalkeepers playing up front and so on.
Yeah, goalkeeper playing up front, not something we ever want to see. Outfield players going in goal, more of that when someone's been sent off. I think that's something that all football fans can agree on. Okay, good stuff as always, guys. We've got through a lot of different topics and some very interesting questions there. Thank you, listeners, as always, for the questions that you threw in. We've got a couple of good ones that I don't want to have to rush through now, so we will put on the back burner for future recordings of the show as well. So don't worry, we will come back to your suggestions and topics. But I think that's plenty enough Chinese football talk for this week. Brandon, thanks for your input as always.
Yep, happy to be here, Steve. Have a good one, everyone.
See if we're talking about 10 in a row next time. And Cam, thanks for the comments and feedback from Shanghai as usual.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks, everyone. I look forward to next time.
Yeah, we might be a little bit later than normal next week because we do want to wait until those group games are all done and dusted and we can have a look back on those and maybe look ahead to a seismic game in the league the weekend after the one that's coming up. So hold your horses. The podcast will be with you again at some point in the next 10 days or so. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. Please do rate, review, share the pod, check out our page on Patreon if you're so inclined, and I have been your host, Steve Crooks. See you again next time.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。